nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
Good morning, and as one of the locals, I guess here on the last day, I'd like to add my welcome, and I hope everyone is enjoying this wonderful workshop as much as I am. So rather than talking really about quantum or nano, I'm sort of in a different area. I come from a background in ultrafast optics, and so I'll be talking about ultrafast and broadband photonic signal processing. But really in my group, we blend a number of things. I mentioned ultrafast optics. Traditionally, I'd like to sort of apply that sort of in engineering of information, and so in high-speed fiber optic communications, or in recent years with a big emphasis on using photonics to do novel things in construction and processing of very broadband RF signals beyond what we can do with electronics. And in many cases, particularly recently, we've been active in using micro devices, usually micro-ring resonator systems, for either an ultrafast optics or signal processing. And so I'll try to blend these with an emphasis really on the micro devices, because I think there maybe is a larger overlap integral with our workshop audience. So I'll construct the talk this way. Very briefly, I'll give an introduction to pulse shaping, which is a theme that I've been involved in for and happy with for much of my career, and some application very briefly to ultra-broadband RF processing. And that will actually then take us into the micro-resonator, chip-level micro-resonator devices. The first one I'll talk about is how we can take some of the bulk optic pulse-shaping functions onto a silicon photonic chip with applications to generation of very broadband RF. I'll go on to some very current work on frequency comb generation on again, for micro rings, and talk about how pulse shaping and time domain studies can not only allow us to form short pulses, but to gain new insight into the interesting nonlinear optical processes. And then some other very current work on optical non-reciprocity, or basically which comes about through nonlinear optics and the silicon photonics chip, something we call an optical diode. I wanted to point out that all of these micro-resonator type of works are close collaborations. My group doesn't really know very much about making devices. But the first and the third topic are very close collaborations with a group of my colleague, Professor Minghao Qi here at Purdue. The second topic is a collaboration with actually a former student who did a postdoc at NIST in Maryland and his colleagues. Now we've sort of brought that capability up at Purdue and are starting to do it again in a collaboration with Minghao. And then finally, time permitting, I'll return to some bulk optics, but using photonics for sort of space-time control of waves propagating through scattering fields, scattering media. Here will be broadband RF waves, but with an interesting mix where we use the photonics to exercise control. So briefly on pulse shaping, and this is quite a well-developed topic now, but it comes into some of our talk. So the brief idea, some years ago, I and a few colleagues at Bellcor became interested in, given that we have a short pulse from a mode-locked laser, how can we almost arbitrarily reshape it for whatever purposes we have? And a technique that turns out to work very well is to send the short pulse that has a lot of optical frequencies in it off of some spectrally dispersive elements so we can spread out frequencies, only two of which are illustrated here. Put them through a modulator array or spatial light modulator where you can control amplitude, phase independently on a frequency-by-frequency basis. And after recombining all the frequencies, what you do is have a new waveform, because you've coherently controlled the Fourier spectrum by the inverse Fourier transform, you have some waveform. And so here's just a few of the old waveforms that I like, all putting a lot of detail in a short pulse on a very fast time scale. So this type of approach has a lot of applications now. In my group, as I mentioned, we emphasize light wave communications or radio frequency photonics, but in terms of coherent quantum control, nonlinear microscopy, compressing pulses to sort of the single cycle limit. And that one probably shouldn't have survived for this talk, but that's the fact that it has nice use in RF photonics is key to some of my other activities. Okay, so I want to jump into this RF business, and the idea is that even though electronics are coming on, it's hard to make very, very broadband RF signals using conventional techniques. So if you want tens of gigahertz, or until very recently, even below 10 gigahertz. So it was very hard to do directly with digital to analog converters and electronic instrumentation. But photonics can be much faster, and so we got involved in a number of techniques where you short pulses, things like pulse shaping or other fast photonic technologies to make waveforms of interest, and you put them in an optical electrical converter, reading fast photodetector, and then you can get a voltage or current waveform that has some interesting detail that perhaps you couldn't get otherwise. And there are a number of techniques, but the one that sort of ties into my themes today is, in some cases, we use something called a dispersive propagation, just a length of fiber, called a frequency to time converter. And the idea is that simply by carving up the optical power spectrum, as shown here in one example, the different frequencies have different delays, so they get mapped to time. Here on a sort of a nanosecond or sub-nanosecond scale, you can see a very nice replica between the optical spectrum and the generated time domain signal that we now is an arbitrary electrical waveform, showing some interesting frequency steps that we couldn't make by other means a few years ago when we made this. Here's just one other example. Here we're making spectra and then RF and time that have sort of impulse with little wiggles on them, with the task of trying to make a very broadband flat RF spectrum that happens to fill up something the FCC calls the ultra-wideband communications range, again, sort of trying to craft signals in a way we couldn't do so well with electronics. Now, just a little glimpse into why this is perhaps interesting is, you know, ultra-fast optics or fiber communications, people deal very much with dispersion. Sort of the phase effects are all important. And it turns out, generally in RF systems, that's not the case because you don't usually have pulses. You have narrow band systems. But in some cases, you might be interested, and we're very interested in looking at impulsive RF systems, and there, actually, dispersion can become important. And so to sort of show that, here's just an experiment with two commercial wideband antennas. I believe these were sort of 2 to 12 gigahertz antennas. It's no problem to make. But some of these antennas aren't engineered for phase response, or they aren't engineered for short pulse response. Not all antennas, but a number of interesting antennas. So in this experiment, we take a very short electrical pulse, which happens to be laser generated with the photodetector. We send it over a simple 1 to 2 meter free space length, the simplest thing you can do. And this is what you get out. And so your pulse sort of has all of the frequency content, but it spreads out by 300 times, just showing these types of antennas have a huge frequency-dependent delay. And so it turns out, you know, the background in sort of compensating dispersion optics, you can say, why not apply the same ideas in the RF domain? And so if you have one of these, what I'm calling a photonic arbitrary RF waveform generator, you can try to make a waveform that self-compresses in this dispersive link. And so here's an example. It's not quite as aggressive as what I showed you before, but here's an example of a 200 picosecond electrical impulse coming out of our photonic waveform generator. Now it spreads by about a factor of 10 in this dispersive length. That's about what we could handle at the time we did these experiments. And so now we make a pre-distorted waveform. It's essentially this one run backwards, so it's a time reversal experiment. And when this goes through the antennas now, it self-compresses, and we get a bandwidth-limited waveform. And so this concept, although it's very familiar in optics, is to our knowledge the first time ever anybody ever did this in sort of the broadband RF domain. So there are a lot of other things we're interested in the mix of photonics and RF. I'll come back to that in the end of the talk. But let me launch now some discussion of the micro devices. And so the first is for this purpose of RF waveform generation. Again, this is a collaboration with my colleague Minghao Chi and his students. And a couple different views of what we're doing. What we want to do is we want to take our broadband spectrum and we want to shape it. And that, as I've shown you before, can be used to exercise control over broadband RF generation. And so in this schematic of the chip, we have a series of ring resonators. There will be 8 of these. These can all be independently tuned through thermo-optic heaters, which are shown in this version of the figure. Now, each of these ring resonators has a sharp resonance, sort of tens of gigahertz wide. And depending whether you look in the through port or the drop port, you can turn these into a series of dips on your spectrum or series of peaks. And we have 16 heaters here, and so we can tune all the resonance positions of these spectral features independently. With some interferometric couplers, we can also affect the coupling and change the amplitude of the different resonant features. And here's just one example showing tuning of one resonant feature over a wide dynamic range and not in the other one. And so in the end, we can start to make some interesting spectra that together with this frequency to time conversion idea, can result in RF waveforms. And so here's just another view. We have a mode-locked laser input with a broad spectrum. There's the device I showed before, dispersive fiber for frequency-to-time conversion, and a photodetector. And so a couple examples, some simple ones, are here's our 8 spectral features. Normally, you can't line them up with a lithography. You just don't have that level of control. But with the heaters, we can line these up to sort of have a constant spacing and frequency, which gives us sort of a nice, regular, relatively regular pulse train in time. We can play with the relative amplitudes, which would is something you would do to get a cleaner RF spectrum. Or we can make what we call upchirp or downchirp waveforms, where we can modulate the spacing in a controlled way between pulses. And in these time frequency representations, you can sort of see we're changing the frequency modulation over nearly 10 gigahertz up and down in sort of nanosecond time scale. Something that's very hard or not possible to do with available electronics. So another example that I'll talk a little bit more about is on a comb generation in microresonators, or cascaded wave mixing in microresonators. So this is becoming a very hot topic. It was launched by a paper by Tobias Kippenberg's group back in 2007. And so the idea is here they were using microtoroids and with evanescent fiber coupling, but you still launch into a very high Q resonator. The single frequency light builds up in intensity, and through cascaded four-wave mixing, populates the other longitudinal modes of the resonator. And so for single frequency in, you can get an array of frequencies out. In some cases, these can push to octave wide. And the idea is, can these type of devices play a role in the same way that self-reference mode-locked lasers have led to many kind of amazing opportunities? Another example, and this is kind of the platform that we've adopted for our work, is moving this into a chip-level format. So this is work in Cornell group, where they moved to a silicon nitride. So now it's all chip level defined by lithography, and similar type of thing. You pump and get lots of different frequencies. And here's a few examples. These are typically the hundreds of gigahertz to sort of a terahertz type of spacing between the lines. So we're going to look in the time domain with pulse shaping, but sort of the interesting physics I kind of want to preview here. You can ask, well, how do these combs, when combs are, I'd say, in quotation marks, are really formed? So one of the kind of the prevailing picture, which you know I think is roughly correct, is once you pump at a certain level, you have four-wave mixing gain that you can imagine sequentially populating adjacent longitudinal modes, and then they can cascade. And this sort of process, once you have four-wave mixing, the nonlinear optics sort of replicates frequency spacings, and you could expect very regular frequency spacings and kind of to have quite a coherent process. And I may refer to this as type one. But another thing you could imagine happening, and this happens quite often, is instead of populating the adjacent longitudinal modes, you may populate, say, modes that are 3 away. Could be 27 away. It could be, you know, there's lots of different things that happen. And then as you crank up the power or tune your laser a little bit closer into resonance, what happens is you fill in the intermediate modes. And so now what you're doing, say, is you're going up by 3, and then you're kind of subdividing. And there's nothing in this process that enforces that you exactly subdivide equally. Dispersion says the cavity resonances are slightly differently spaced. And so, in fact, you might believe, and this is what we have learned, is that these different families of modes aren't fully coherent with each other. And so that's going to be one of the problems to sort of solve to make these sort of sources really useful. Okay, so here's a type of experiments we do. We come in with a tunable CW laser that we tune to the resonance of one of these silicon nitride ring resonators, here made by our colleagues at NIST, and we put them into pulse shapers. We use an autocorrelator and try to compress the short pulses. And by the way, in the process, what we do is we just play with the phases on the different spectral lines. And as we observe the autocorrelator, we learn which phases are needed to make basically flatten the phases and to give compression. So we compress to pulses, and we learn about the spectral phase sort of all in the same operation. And so this is the first time anybody kind of really looked at these in the time domains. And as you'll see, we learn new things about the coherence in a way that I've previewed here. Okay, so here's an example. I'll show you what we call our type 1, or these combs that seem to be fully coherent. They generate one free spectral range or adjacent modes cascading out. So here's an example of sort of 20 lines or so. When we shape these and use fiber amplifiers, that limits our bandwidth. So we only have about 10 lines here, but we can go through the pulse shaper, our initial signal, this blue one, out of the comb generator is it's something, but it's not short pulses. But by finding the right phase profile, we can compress to this red curves. And so we have 600 gigahertz pulse train, sort of in the few hundred femtosecond level. And the black is sort of what we expected. The phase is all right. And it does pretty good, which says these are pretty coherent, basically. We can also do some shaping. So if we put in, say, a simple pi phase shift in half of the spectrum, we reshape the waveform in a way that we expect. And so it says, you know, these sort of behave like mode-locked lasers in this case. They're coherent, and you can use that. Here's just another example at 115 gigahertz. And again, you can see that you can take these. So initially, not, you know, weakly modulated waveforms with the right phases, you can compress into nice, quite coherent pulses. And a key point is that these pulses really come down to the level that you expect. So here's just a counterexample. And this is what we're calling type 2 and is representative of the sort of process that I said is sort of an imperfect frequency divider and is less coherent. And it may look sort of similar. We start with this weakly modulated blue waveform. When we try our hardest to compress, we can sort of compress this red waveform, but it never comes all the way down. And that may look like a small detail, but in this business, contrast is everything. And the only thing that differentiates a coherent set of pulses, let's go on, from a burst of broadband noise is a contrast ratio. And so this is kind of a classic plot that says this is a signature of a coherent pulse, this is a signature of a noise burst, it's the contrast. And so what we've learned is that there's a lot of things to make this go coherent every time. Sometimes it's coherent. How can we design devices that are always coherent and we can use them in the way that we do mode-locked lasers? I want to speculate a little bit in new directions. From the applied point of view, you know, we're looking forward as we kind of better master these comb generators. We talk about pulse shapers to form pulses. What about putting them all in a chip? They're micro-ring resonators. Okay, one silicon, one silicon nitride. There should be ways forward to integrate these functions and perhaps have a chip that has a CW laser in, high rep rate pulse trains coming out. Sort of a more fundamental basis, as I mentioned, there's interesting things we need to learn about this sort of nonlinear optics. And one of the questions we can ask is, how close is this to a mode-locked laser? You know, there's been a lot of studies of mode-locked lasers, a lot of understanding. And, for example, mode-locked laser, we have laser gain, okay, and these ring resonators with parametric gain, something that limits the bandwidth, which we haven't necessarily put into these micro-rings yet. Dispersion nonlinear phase modulation are both basically in mode-locked lasers and these micro-rings. But nonlinear loss modulation is very important, or saturable loss in mode-locked lasers. Interesting question is, if we look at the ring resonators, can you get stable pulse trains dependently over wide operating conditions without saturable loss? We see some evidence we have that. Maybe there's some hidden saturable loss that people just haven't discovered yet, or maybe it's different and that's not needed. So that's an interesting, you know, question for us and for the field. I want to go into the third sort of micro-resonator device. And this is, so this one's not ultra-fast, but I'll show you some communications that's sort of fast. And so this is something that we call, with our colleague Minghao Qi, an all-silicon optical diode. So it's an example of a optical non-reciprocity, which is an area that has a great deal of activity right now. And the idea is, can we basically have a device where if we put in light in one direction, it goes through. If we could put in light in the other direction, it doesn't go through. And so the particular device that we worked on is sort of a series of cascaded rings, a notch filter, and an add-drop filter. These are kind of shown here. They're tuned together with microheaters to share the same resonance. And it's the one that we can talk about initiating the non-reciprocity is this add-drop filter that's asymmetric coupling. So there's a good coupling region or a larger gap with less coupling. And it turns out that, even though the linear transmission is the same, the amount of power buildup is different. When you have higher coupling, you build up more power. And once you have nonlinear optics, put in light here very quickly, thermal nonlinearities that shift the resonance. And so you start to have different behavior in forward or backward. And so in the backward direction, you basically shift the resonance, so you're kind of off the resonant coupling peak that sort of sends you over there. But it's a fairly weak contrast, not around 10 dB, and we're kind of interested in much more than that. And so it turns out that if you cascade this with a notch filter, so this is kind of a narrow transmission dip in linear operation, you can sort of amplify this effect. And so here what you see is in the forward operation, we have relatively high-powered Nash filter, and it kind of thermo-optically shifts the resonance before it snaps back, so this is a well-known effect. But in the backward direction, this isn't backward, this is high and low power. Here's our notch, and so this is very, very power dependent. Turns out when you put these together, you get a sort of a very strong effect.
Could you go back, please?
I could.
This is a one-way mirror, right? You put the line in one way, it goes through, the other way, it's reflected. Am I hearing you?
No, so what we're going to do is we're going to monitor port 1 and port 2. We're doing some other things with sort of port 3. Then you might start to talk about a transistor, which we are, but that's not very well developed right now. But view this as a two-port device, 1 and 2, and so we're going to look at the transmission 1 to 2 or 2 to 1. I'm not going to really get into now whether there's a light reflected, does it come on another port, or does it have increased loss inside the resonator. So all of those can happen. And then, so there's a lot of different ways to break it down, but let's just focus on the input-output characteristics. Okay, and so here's what happens if we work at low power, and this is sort of about less than 100 nanowatts inside the waveguides. Basically, in forward and backward direction, we just have this resonance dip. Okay, but now if we go up about a 3 orders of magnitude, but there's still less than 100 microwatts in the waveguides, basically we see quite different in forward and backward. In forward, we kind of shift the notch filter, and backward we don't. If you work at this resonance, blue resonance peak, you get about 20 dB contrast. And by the way, if you crank up the power to sort of the milliwatt level, we kind of approach and sometimes 30 dB contrast. Sometimes we see even more than that. So it's kind of a first of a class optical diode, and we're careful using the word diode, sort of has high output one way, not with the other way. It has very high contrast. It works over an interesting range of powers. And so we're quite happy with this. This was published in Science a few months ago. But since we want to talk about new things here as well, so here's some questions that were new since then. Let's couple this with optical communications. And now it's not going to be ultra-fast optics. Let's talk about 10 gigabits per second. That's pretty fast and is interesting for optical communications. And so the issue is that these are resonant devices, the few gigahertz resonant widths, and if you're taking a slow light perspective, for example, you usually say, well, I use resonance effects to sort of delay my light, but that limits how much modulation bandwidth can I have. Here, it's actually kind of different. We can actually use resonances, and we can use modulated light with a bandwidth larger than the resonance, because what happens is in the forward direction, we push our resonance away. This is the red curve. We don't see it, and we kind of just have a beautiful transmission medium. But in the backwards direction, we've been unsuccessful at moving our resonance, and so the resonance in our backward direction actually helps us block the data transmission. Another point I'll make is, by the way, these are thermal nonlinears, timescale about a microsecond. It's kind of interesting to think how you can use this for 10 gigabit per second communications. But the idea is that's actually great. It averages all your data and means you don't worry about your data pattern. And so anyway, just very quickly, here's some communications results in the forward direction. We have beautiful 10 gigabits per second data. Backwards, we've amplified this a lot so you can even see it. But then the data is basically reshaped in a very kind of crazy way there. And the interesting thing is we kind of have a non-reciprocal phase response. In the backwards direction, we experience a resonance, and so all the dispersion screws up your data. In the forward direction, we push the resonance away, and we don't have it. So it's kind of something else that comes to our aid. And we kind of think it's an interesting situation in combining these type of devices with reasonable speed communications experiments. So finally, I'm going to sub-select some of these charts. There's some other interesting things in here, but let me just touch on this recent interest of ours. And so there's a very strong interest these days in using, in looking at propagation of signals, of waves through scattering media, highly scattering media. These can be optics, these can be RF, these can even be acoustic. And moreover, to kind of shape the excitation fields to focus waves through the medium. And so in this, you know, community, there's a great deal. This is sort of the optical analogy. You might imagine sort of a short pulse coming through highly scattering media. It generates speckle, but in the time, these are different time signatures at different positions. In the RF environment, which I want to come back to, suppose you just have a short RF pulse and you propagate it in an indoor environment. So you want to do wireless from your office to the office two down. So it bounces off of everything. That's a strongly scattering environment. And you might imagine having, with a pulse electrons, you might imagine having a very complex waveform coming out, sort of an analogy with the optics. And by the way, if you kind of move your receiving antenna, just like a different speckle spot in optics, you expect to have a highly complicated but decorrelated waveform. So again, because I'm at the end of time, I'm going to skip over some interesting things in terms of how we got to the point we could do this. But let me just say that we've learned how to extend our RF waveform generation to much more complex waveforms. The simple ones I showed you before weren't enough to tackle this multipath problem. But we can make RF waveforms that look like this. This is a 40 gigahertz chirp waveform over several nanoseconds, flat spectrum up to 40 gigahertz, much beyond anything you can do electronically or anything we could do with the way we used to know how to use pulse shapers up to a few months ago. And if we have this, so this is going to be the punchline and where I conclude, is we can now do space-time control of very broadband RF fields in these highly scattering indoor propagation environments. And so these, for example, are just the impulse response of two different channels. So I have a transmitter in one room, one or two rooms away. I have a receiver. I move the receiver antenna by half a meter. I get these quite complicated waveforms, sort of 100 picosecond timescale features over tens of nanoseconds. Using photonics, I can kind of shape RF waveforms that are kind of the inverse versions of these signatures, and I can cause a pulse to peak itself up on whichever of the receiving antennas I choose. And so here I choose to peak it up on receiver one. Here I peak it up on receiver two. When I peak it up on receiver one, receiver two doesn't have a peak. And so from the practical point of view, we're very interested in things like very high data rate, covert wireless communications. From the fundamental point of view, we're intrigued by sort of the analogies with these wave propagation and scattering media that transcend many different fields, and think this is an interesting environment to study some aspects of that. So let me skip another one of these and just conclude. You know, despite the fact I'm an experimentalist, I hardly ever get down to the laboratory, and so I'd like to thank, this is the current set of people in my group who did much of this work. I mentioned to my colleague, who's a key person in all the micro devices, and support from Office of Secretary of Defense, NSF, and recently Air Force Office of Scientific Research. Thank you.